Welcome everyone to the West Print Sports Review here on Planet FM. West Print are the proud sponsors of this show. They are based at 9 Pereri Street in New Lynn. Their phone number is 09827 8531, or if you want to email them on westprint.co.nz. And they're really good sponsors of this show, and they're leaders in the printing world. Have to say, lovely day here in the City of Sales. A bit chilly in the morning, found it a bit hard. I thought it was back in Christchurch, minus the sheep. But anyway, what was it? Just yesterday, had a great day out at the Naval Base watching a Golden Oldies game, and I have to say the prices at the Naval Base don't change. It's always a pleasure to visit there. But I'm just going to get to a few topics before we head into giving the Auckland Club Rugby scores. There was an article which came out, and I've known about this for a few weeks. College Rifles Rugby and Sporting Club, basically, they have been through a judicial hearing via the Auckland Rugby Union regarding player payments or player approaches. I have to be very, very careful on how I say this, because I'm getting the document sent to me now from the Auckland Rugby Union. This went through a judicial hearing. It was College Rifles were fined $15,000. $5,000 of that must go to the New Zealand Rugby Foundation. They were also slapped with a warning. If this was to happen again, they will be docked 30 points for the next 3 seasons. This is what came out of this hearing. Now, I will be looking more into this hearing. I am going to say this. There is such a divide within Auckland Rugby, it's getting bigger and bigger. When I first came up here in 1995, there was up to over 20 clubs in Auckland Club Rugby. Now we're down to 13, more or less 12, 13, maybe 12 and a half, because some of the teams don't have the finances or don't have the same necessary ability for player recruitments. I'm speaking as an individual, not as many of you may know that I'm also a member of the Eden Rugby Club. I'm not speaking on the behalf of Eden. I'm speaking on the behalf of Eamon Hallisey, who runs this show. I'm going to say to you, Auckland Rugby, you had an opportunity to make a bigger statement. For many, during the Saturday just gone, at many times, many clubs were concerned, were they going to be in the top four or not? Potentially, you didn't take any points off them. There has been points deductions this year for late team sheets and eligible players, but there's been nothing done on this. I'm proud to be associated with a club like Eden. We don't play players, and we've worked hard for where we were. 10 years ago, we were getting thrashed. Now we're in a Gallagher Shield semi-final 3 times in a row. A club like Eden probably shouldn't be there, but we do. We battle. We recruit our players. We work hard to get our players. To me, we're the hard workers, as are other clubs. Auckland Rugby, you've made the call, but You will have to learn to live with your decision. On that note, I'm going to start off with the Auckland Rugby scores. Eden 79, Waitakere 16, Gramatech 42, College Rifles 10, University 99, Manukau Rovers 7, Marist 41, Suburbs 12, Ponsonby 82, Otahuhu 0, Papatoa 50, Waitemata 27, Pakeranga had the bye. So, the semi-finals for the Gallagher Shield will be as follows. Ponsonby will play Eden at Western Springs at 2:45. College Rifles will play Gramatech at College Rifles at 2:45. And on the line, who's probably had to listen to my mumbling and stumbling, is AJ Wheaton. AJ, good afternoon to you, mate.
Yeah, g'day, Brad, and obviously I can hear a bit of the emotion and passion in your voice, and well put, as I say. Decisions are made, whether we agree or not. We've just got to look forward now to the semi-finals and let rugby, hopefully, be the winner, and the teams that have done it right get to that final and enjoy it, because it is a great occasion. It's tough, but as I say, everyone's just looking for an equal playing field, eh, Piggy?
Absolutely, and as I said, you know, we've both seen club rugby just, there are clubs out there that are just about you know, they can't afford probably to turn the lights on, and that's and really we have to address the elephant in the room, and not the piggy in the room, but not the piggy behind the mic. Auckland, stuff like this shows there is such a great divide, and I can't see it coming right for a number of years, AJ. But anyway, enough on that. Let's get on to the All Blacks training run, 102 to Tonga nil. So listen, I'm going to be straight to the point. I don't know what you gain out of a match like that, AJ.
Well, look, it's on the table. The All Blacks needed a run, and you called it a training run, and we can look at it from that point of view. Tonga needed a run. Mm. Don't forget, they have an all-important match against Manu Samoa, World Cup qualifier, so they needed a run. And in these difficult times, COVID times, international travel is an issue, getting boys here, quarantine, etc. So, look, you had to tick that box. International rugby, yes, probably more for the benefit of the All Blacks and combinations and so forth, but it's just where we are in the moment in world rugby, and we need these matches. So, look, it's good for the spectators. Tonga did their best, but they were well and truly out of their depth. But let's hope there is some positives for them as they go into their little international window, which I assure you is pretty important for them.
Oh, absolutely, a World Cup qualifier, so to avoid them going into a repetitive-type situation. So, I have to say it was great. Will Jordan was fantastic, 5 tries, but, you know, you have a look at it. Luke Jacobson was very, very good. I felt he really impressed. I was quite impressed with Quinn Tupia, and it was great to see him get his debut. Finlay Christie, George Bauer, and, of course, Ethan Blackadder. So it was great occasion for those guys.
Oh, well, look, it's their first test match, and it doesn't matter whether it's Tonga or whether it could be South Africa.
Yeah.
And they've ticked that box, they've worn the black jersey, so congratulations to them. I guess now it's up to those players to try and secure more games. And the limited opportunity they get, they've got to make it a winning one. And, go across the winning post and say, hey, listen, I know it was Tonga, but hey, I'm in the mix, and that's what you want, is to build that depth and get their opportunity. You're right, Will Jordan, I mean, he's got wheels. Anything out wide, he was gone. I thought the boy, Tupia, not a bad debut for him, and he looked pretty solid in midfield. Some good backup, we need that there. Brian Webber, well, we know old Brad, he's a little maestro around the halfback, and you mentioned the loose forwards, Ione, Jacobson, Papali'i, 2 tries.
Yep.
Well done to him. And, of course, the forwards are just too strong, and we expected that. Some players put their little finger up a bit higher. Others just did their job, but, the bigger stuff's to come. We've got Fiji.
Yeah.
Who knows what's going to happen there? I don't expect it to be that sort of score, but it all depends on where they are all mentally going into these next 2 test matches.
Yeah, I think Fiji may offer a bit more resistance, but I'm still picking the All Blacks by over 50+. I just think the talent's there, and they can mix it. Well, it's an opportunity to mix squads up. It's probably not that it's well. It's the only preparation we got. Not ideal going into a rugby championship, AJ.
No, but I mean, as I said, it is what it is. That's the window to get teams from the Northern Hemisphere. We know there's the British and Lions Irish tour at the moment. So that takes precedent. England's playing, Wales playing, and, they've all got their commitments, and it's the travel. So, hey, we've just got to suck it up.
Yep.
Great to have Fiji here. Good opportunity for them. And look, if Fiji get it right, just do their basics right and get a wee bit of pill. Mm. I mean, they're exciting. So I'm looking forward to them. You know, they're going to chance their arm. They'll throw the ball around. There'll be some big hits, that's for sure. And let's see what they can bring to the table. But let's, just go with the flow. It is what it is. So let's enjoy international rugby here on our doorstep.
Yeah, and of course, the Maoris were pretty solid over Manu Samoa, 38-21. I was watching that while I was probably selling another raffle at Eden, but I have to say the Maoris looked pretty good. And of course, some of the other results, like South Africa had their first game in so many years, 40 points to 9 over a very spirited Georgia team. I actually watched that game and I felt, well, Georgia really gave them a bit of a run for their money, but South Africa didn't look too bad. But the British and Irish Lions played the other Lions from South Africa and they looked really good, 56-14.
You'd expect that. I mean, you know, it was Hungary. It's a shortened tour, eight matches, I think. So the test matches are only another fortnight away. So every game is like a little mini test match. They're the Lions, not having one of their better seasons. The Bulls and Sharks, to me, those will be the two big teams they'll come across. So, yeah, very interesting. Can't wait for those test matches. I mean, they should be rippers, the current world champions against the Lions. So, yeah, that's the big test matches in town at the moment. So looking forward to that, Peggy.
Certainly are. And, of course, then during on Wednesday we have the Wallabies play their first test of the season against France. Now, that's a game. It's, you know, like France could rest a lot of players, but you don't know which French side's going to come out. They could either lose by 40 or win by 20. That's the sort of unpredictable France are.
Yeah, well, they've come off their top 14 championship again, Toulouse obviously winning it against La Rochelle, which is coached, well, director of rugby, Chris Gibbs, and so Jerome Kono picking up another title. Boy, is he having a great season to finish his career at some stage. Fantastic. Look, I think the first test, you'd have to fancy the home team Aussie. I know they've battled, especially through the Transmen, but come together under Mr. Rennie. I think Dave is a very articulate coach. I think they should come away with the first one, but as that test match series develops, and it's a short window, they're coming in, they're playing in 10 days, they're not mucking about. I expect the French to get better and better as their little mini tour goes on the field.
Yeah, well, that should be interesting. Well, of course, you'll be at College Rifles this weekend coming up.
No, sadly, I won't be there. Just to let you know, I came over on business and I've just been caught in a bit of a lockdown over here in Sydney. So,
well, you're kidding me.
Yeah, I'm over here in Manly. Got my laptop, so I'm here, but things are looking better over here. Hope to be back on the weekend, fingers crossed, or early next, so I'm going to miss the final. But I tell you what, it's a lovely spot here. The sun's shining, the surf's up across from my hotel, and I can think of worse places, but sorry, Piggy, I won't be there to see you and for you to buy me a beer.
Well, it's only semis, it's in a week or so's time for finals, so we've got a couple of weeks before that, so just in case it is a Grammar Eden final, I don't want you to, you know, try and drag me up to the Barbarians Club and film me full of alcohol, you know, as you know, the rubber arm I have.
No, I'm sorry, I won't be able to because there's a certain, it's a height restriction and you've got to be over 5'7". So may possibly, I think you may fail.
Well, if I find a chair, I might make it. Anyway, AJ, listen, first of all, AJ, thanks for doing this and you're locked down. Just one thing, are any of the bars open down there? There's no bars open, obviously, there.
No, there's no nothing like that's open, but there is the liquor land that's open here. So
they must know you by first name basis now, buying all that rum.
there's a bit here, the ice and the rum here, and I've got a lovely view. I'm not complaining too much.
You take care, AJ. Thank you for doing this in these really strange, uncertain times. So I'll give you a text during the week and we'll have it. Hopefully we can have a chat next week.
Anytime, bud. Take care.
Cheers. Thanks a lot. AJ Wetton, good on him. In lockdown, the poor guy, the owner of the liquor land would probably know him by first name basis now, but poor old, good old AJ comes out of lockdown to help out myself. So we'll play a bit of music and then we'll get Bloom Clinton.
Just as nice. One day, any day, I'll hold on.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Sports Review here on Planet FM. And, of course, we come to the NRL part of the show. And, of course, I would say that I was on Friday, wasn't feeling the best, didn't go into work. So I thought, you know, wrapped up, heater on, decided to watch the Warriors, and I'm going to be straight to the point. Left went to bed very, very disappointed. But I'd like to welcome our NRL expert and former Kiwis coach, former Leeds Rhinos, former New Zealand Warriors coach, Bluey McLennan. G'day, Bluey. How are you?
Yeah, good, Plicky. How you doing?
Good, good, good. Okay, we better address this one first. Dragons 19, Warriors 18. We really need to close these games. And I really felt after Tohu Harris wasn't there that there was a real, that poor old Roger is trying to do everything himself, and there wasn't anyone within that team that showed a bit of, put their hand up to show a bit of leadership.
Well, it's a cruel game. I thought for fairly large periods the Warriors looked the better team. They got more strike, but the Warriors are trying to set up their game on shaky foundations. They've been doing it for a while now. They're just not getting their first quarters done. When you play a game of league, your first quarters, you're building your foundation quarter, and you've really got to nail those, and they're missing the mark by a long shot. All they got to do is come out a bit more aggressive and apply some pressure in that first quarter, and then they're going to be a chance of building a good game. But at the moment, they're getting that wrong.
Yeah, they certainly are. And, of course, unfortunately, you could actually see it happening in front of you. You could actually see, like a lot of people said about the Chad Townsend attempt for a field goal. Personally, I thought it was a good option. If it had gone over, we would have won that match. There would have been no talk about we would be talking about how good the Warriors were and what they need to improve on. But it was just at times, it's just that lack of discipline. They get caught out in defence so many times. You could see that last try happening, Bluey. They were caught out on that side.
Well, their spacings were a bit tight out towards the centres there. But, I still think there's a lot in this team. There's a lot of strike. And if the coaching staff can get it right, this team should surely make the eight. Now, there's nine games to go. I said it before, I'll say it again. Their problem's their first quarter. That's their issue. Address that. Kiwi teams need to be aggressive. So they need to really fire them up, get them strong in that first quarter, and build a proper foundation so they can start playing. Very difficult without Nikarima, Harris, yeah. DeVita, Reece Walsh comes in. For mine, Reece Walsh, I'd bring him in on the left side. As a half. And Roger Tuivasa-Sheck's defence, is way better than Reece Walsh's at the moment, given experience. Yep. And Reece Walsh likes to float around on that left edge anyway. He's got that beautiful left foot kick. Hopefully Chad Townsend is right for next week, Piggy. I thought he was really good.
His kicking game was very good.
Oh, it was great value for money, and he got hurt in the first two couple of minutes there, and he battled on. I thought it was a courageous effort. I don't think his game should be defined by taking a shot that drop goal. He made a mistake, but his effort that game was absolutely outstanding. Certainly, did a cheers to him and had a beer to him. I thought that was a great effort by Chad Townsend.
Certainly was. Well, we might as well move on to the other games. And I'll tell you what, Storm, they're just on fire at the moment. 46-0 over the Roosters. Addo Carr, hat-trick. I tell you what, mate, that guy can't stop scoring at the moment.
Oh, I just wonder at having speed and just the way they set up. They give them plenty of space to use the speed. Storm, just a class above. What a wonderful club. I mean, gee, they just keep doing it year after year.
They certainly do. And, of course, then after the Warriors game, the Panthers 13, the Eels 12. This was a hell of a match. And right at the end, Mitch Moses had a chance to win it for the Eels but missed the penalty. But really, there was just a field goal separated those two sides. That was a real tough encounter.
It was really good on Friday night to see the two close games, given that there's blowouts now in NRL. I mean, three games in the NRL, three teams failed to even score a point. But on the Friday night, it was sort of a bit of a throwback to the old NRL days where it was a real dogfight. So enjoyed seeing that. And yeah, there's questions linger over Parramatta. Can they get it done against the big teams? And they still haven't answered that.
Yeah, I don't think they're that far off, Bluey. I don't think they are at all. Anyway, then the Tommy Turbo Show ran into town, 66-0 over the Bulldogs. I had a wee laugh when he was trying to give his younger brother a try on day as well too. But he was just fantastic.
He's on a different planet. He's at another level, isn't he, Tommy Turbo? And Manly are really kicking. You know, they're really kicking forward. They're becoming that dark horse. And the Bulldogs are always going to trouble. You can't put too many young guys in against the pros, and can't put amateurs against professionals. Well done to them.
And, of course, the Titans 44, the Raiders 6. Seen as a bit of an upset, but probably not. David Fifita looked really good out there for the Titans. And then, of course, the Broncos 26. This was a bit of an upset. The Sharks 18. Katobi Staggs looked absolutely fantastic for the Broncos.
Jeez, he's explosive, isn't he, Piggy?
Oh, yeah.
So hard to tackle. The speed, the power. Really, really good for the Broncos. Good to see them win at home. And, you know, Benny Eichen, first sort of day on the job, game day on the job after leaving Fox Sport. And, it's interesting. I'm really looking forward to seeing how Brisbane develop over these last few games.
Well, they could be a danger for any team trying to get into the top eight. But they could be a real danger. And the Rabbitohs, 38. The hapless Tigers, 22. Cody Walker was really... And Cody Walker, Adam Reynolds, they really led that side around.
They did. And while I was watching it, it was just interesting to think, well, do New South Wales just drop them straight in and let them run their systems and everyone...
Yeah.
You know, to keep that... sort of that continuity going with the halves knowing each other, and especially with Cook at dummy half. But I see Brad Fittler's chosen to go the other way, going Mitchell Moses and Whiten, who's been in camp.
Mm-hmm.
So looking more to the future of the New South Wales team. So, while I was watching the Rabbitohs, I was marvelling at what Reynolds and Walker can do. Unfortunately, it didn't work out for them to get through to the Blues team.
No, it certainly didn't, but that's good, you know. Usually, you know, you have a look at where the Blues team is at the moment. You have that Luai-Cleary combinations. Usually you would have that sort of combinations, but they've obviously said to Jack Wine and Mitch Moses, it's your time to shine.
Yeah, and looking to the long term, playing the long game. Getting them developed. It'll be interesting. I think the Queensland teams have got a little bit more speed, and that will help. Unfortunately, Harry Grant isn't available yet, Piggy. And I
don't know what's happening there, Bluey. I think you've hit the wrong button there, Bluey. So I'll just see what happens there. I'll just turn that down. Don't know what's happened to poor old Bluey, but I think he's hit a wrong button there. So we'll see if it's still played. It is disconnected. Oh, no problem, Bob. Okay, well, we might as well move on and we might as well head towards some football. Okay, so I'll play a bit of music. We'll get Noel Barclay on next.
Like young Irishmen in English bars, some of whom betrays us.
Call mother a lonely field.
Call mother a lonely field. Like truthful glances we exchange, some of whom betrays us. Like letters written in descent, never to be opened.
Call mother a lonely field.
Call
mother a lonely field.
I took her picture from the wall. I poured her scent away.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Review. Now we get on to a bit of football, and I tell you what, the Euro 2020 has been absolutely fantastic to watch. Just to give you a quick update on some of the games, when we left here last Monday, Spain beat Croatia 5-3 in extra time. Switzerland and France had a 3-3 draw, but Switzerland went through on penalties 5-4. England got the monkey off the back and beat Germany 2-0. And a fantastic game, Ukraine versus Sweden, and Ukraine won 2-1. So we might as well get on the line, former All-One, an all-round good joker, Noel Barclay. Noel, good morning. How are you?
Yeah, really good. Very excited about the games coming up. There's been a few surprises.
Yeah. Oh, has there?
Hard to believe we're going into the semi-finals and no Portugal, France, Germany, Netherlands, which would have been most people's picks, I'm sure. So, yeah, can't wait.
Yeah, and of course, let's speak about those quarterfinals. Like, the first game was Spain versus Switzerland. Now, that really was not a bad game, but the old Spanish, they know how to sneak into at a big tournament.
Yeah, and, you know, they're along with Italy, they're, you know, two of the giants that European world football in terms of nations, in terms of what they've won. They won it all. And, it's quite an intriguing semi-final, that one. I guess the only thing with Spain, so Spain have been unable to beat Poland, Sweden, Croatia, and Switzerland in 90 minutes. The only team they've beaten in 90 minutes is Slovakia. So they're really sort of jimmied their way in there when really they sort of haven't been that great. But of course, in the semi-final, anything can happen.
It certainly, and it counts for nothing. Well, Italy looked very good against Belgium 2-1. Belgium tried to fight back, but without Eden Hazard and De Bruyne, you know, that was going to be a hard ask.
Yeah, I mean, and also the three at the back for Belgium, you know, they're not world class, and unfortunately, the golden generation, as many people have called them, they're not really going to see it through. I mean, Italy were the best team. I really have enjoyed watching them play. It's not your typical Italian sort of defensive minded, and although there was a bit of a rigmarole at the end of the end of that game against Belgium, but they look really good. Insignia is—he looks definitely classy. He's probably been the best player in the tournament for me so far. The only question mark with them for me is up front. They seem to be light. Immobile, and then Bellotti, who's come on four times. They're not great. You know, they're not world class centre forward. And I think they'll get past Spain. I think they're going to be too big, too strong, and they've got a bit of strength off the bench. And I think they'll beat. I think they'll beat Spain in a tight game. Of course, it's going to be a tight game.
Okay, so we move on to the next one. Denmark, you know, at the beginning of this campaign, it started off as a bit of a nightmare with Christian Eriksen. They lost to Finland 1-0. Really, probably their minds weren't really on that game, but they've came back well. And will this? Can they continue this? They've got England on Thursday, but really it's been a great turnaround by the Danes.
Incredible, yeah. I mean, I just saw a LinkedIn poll, which is a worldwide poll, and they've got the most votes in terms of people who think they're going to win. I'm probably not in that camp. I mean, I think they've done amazingly well to come back from the adversity with Christian Eriksen, and I think that, you know, they will be, you know, the neutrals will support Denmark all the way through now. But I think, you know, they're playing on that raw emotion, and sometimes that only gets you so far. So in my book, you know, they're probably... this is probably where they're going to be at. However, you would never say never, and there's always a slim chance, given the surprise and shocks that we've had already in this tournament.
Now, is it coming home? England for the Ukraine, no. Harry Kane is now... He's been widely criticised during the tournament, but he's now come into doing what he does best, scoring goals. Real polished performance by England. Quite impressed with Luke Shaw. He had a really good game for England.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Maguire and Shaw really sort of shored that England defence up. Is it coming home? Well, I mean, I'm sitting in my office amongst a couple of Englishmen, Joe Jackson and Martin Flairs, and they certainly think it's coming home. They're very, very expectant. Everybody keeps asking me, do I think England will win? I keep reminding them that I'm Irish, not English.
Good man yourself.
Look, I do think they will win. I think they've got the best players. Looks, you know, the fact that he's got Sancho now playing, he's willing to play attacking players and let them go for it. I think in the end they're too strong. An Italy England final is definitely what I'm seeing, and you know, that's going to be a sort of an attack free defence type game with Italy on the counter. I think they'll get there. I think they've got too much off the bench. I mean, the bench is scary; it really is. There's just, you know, there's 6-7 players on there, and you could put anybody on. So, like, I think if England's turn, I know we've been here before, but I think they've got the best team, and they're at home in semi final and final, and I think that counts for a lot.
Certainly does, and when you have a look at that game against Ukraine, they didn't even have to bring Jack Grealish on. He's been really good for them in that tournament.
Yeah, look, and I think that's the interesting thing about the England squad. He's still prepared to pick the team to suit the game. You know, he hasn't got 11 nailed down spots. He'll have a look at the opposition and who plays against Denmark. If they win, isn't necessarily who we'll play against Italy, because it'll be a different sort of game. England will have more possession probably than the opposition, and he quite likely will change the team again. I mean, he's getting criticised a lot, and I was in that camp at the start because he's got so many defensive players, but really without attacking talent, you know, at the other end of the pitch, Kane nigh off the mark. And, you know, I just think they're going to be too good, and it's long overdue.
I think it is long overdue. And, you know, Gareth Southgate does get criticised by the British press, but you have a look at it. The record is a semi-finals at 2018 in Russia. He's on a semi-finals at Euro 2020. Potentially could make a final, potentially could win it. You know, he's probably a good national team manager. I'd love to see what he would be like at a premiership club. I think he may struggle a bit between me and you, Noel, but I think he's done a fantastic job. Just on some New Zealand football, great news coming for the Olympics that Winston Reid has been released from West Ham to join the Ollie Whites in their campaign. That's huge for the Ollie Whites.
Yeah, Absolutely, because he, you know, he's a rock at the back. I'm pretty surprised that Chris Wood was able to get away from Burnley at a time when they possibly were going to sell him, and he might miss the first couple of games in pre-season. So I'm sort of blown away by that. So he's obviously got a very good relationship with his manager, and what a side that team is. I mean, I'm not quite sure why Sarpreet Singh didn't make the squad, but certainly one of the most exciting teams I've seen go away for New Zealand, and they've got a good group. They've got every possibility of getting out of that group.
Oh, absolutely!
Clearly, you know, I think they'll go a bit deeper than people think. They don't have a lot of preparation, which is really unfortunate. But I think everybody's in the same camp with the Olympics. So yeah, I can't wait for that one.
Yeah, I just see a lot of good things coming out of the squad, and I think, you know, the three overage players, Winston Reid, Chris Wood and Michael Boxall. Now, a lot is not spoken about Michael Boxall, but he's a really good servant to New Zealand football, and he's a hard player. He's tough, and I think, you know, having that experience at the back and having the experience up front means that, you know, New Zealand has a great chance to get out of that group. And, you know, once you're in a quarterfinals, anything can happen.
Yeah, absolutely, and if you add Libby at left back in that back four, you know, and maybe Michael Wood in goal. I mean, it's a, you know, they're all fully professional players at the tops of the game, and you've got the kids up top with McCallum and Elijah Just, really, really exciting young players coming through that have now been professional footballers full time for a couple of years. I just think we're just going to be blown away with what they've got and compared to other countries. Yeah, very exciting. The girls, not so much. I think it's going to be tough for them. They've got a brutal group. And again, the lack of preparation is going to really hurt them. They've got a couple of games, I think, against Team GB, Great Britain, and before the tournament starts. So they'll need to make the most of those.
Yeah, and they'll be important for combinations and which is going to be the sides that are going to go out. But for the football Ferns, I think that's going to be a really, really tough group. And if they were able to get a point out of it, I think they've done very well. Anyway, Noel, I have to say thanks a lot for coming on today. I've really enjoyed you. Always enjoy your a bit of a chat. And we definitely have to meet for a Kilkenny's one day, Noel.
Oh yes, this is my favourite. Well, we'll be down there at the Right Track on Monday, watching the game, and we've got booked a day off and playing a bit of golf later. So we'll hopefully they've got that on tap.
Okay, well, I've got to work now. I can't afford to have any more days off, but we'll definitely organise a time to catch up. Thanks a lot, Noel, and I really appreciate you coming on.
My pleasure.
Cheers. Noel Barclay, former All-White, really great analyst of the game. And, you know, it's good talking a bit of Euros. Good talking a bit of local football as well. Well, next up, we have the panel, Sean Summerfield and Mark Watson. We're going to be talking about a bit of international rugby, a bit of motorsport, a bit about the Olympics, which Mark will be working for Sky Sport in. So let's get on a bit of music and we'll get to them straight away.
And the dawn is your whisper. Don't worry about your health, babe. Let's just get it on. I got cold fingers.
Rain. Hey mate, how are you? I'll just put you there and I'll just put on Sean
Scintillating music before we get on to the next part. And of course I didn't realise I had my mic on the whole time, so no wonder I couldn't hear the music. So broadcasting rookie mistake. I've only been doing it a year, but silly me, so I do apologise. And there were no swear words to the people in the station. Anyway, we might as well get back to the adult part of the show. First of all, I'd like to welcome on the man, the legend, the hopeless romantic, Mr. Mark Watson. How are you?
Very well, Amon, and good afternoon to your other guest, or our other guest, Sean.
Yes, the Silver Tongues.
Hey guys, how are you?
I better put it on the Silver Tongues, Silver Fox, the host of the CRC Motorsport Show on TV3, Mr. Sean Summerfield. Good afternoon to you, Sean. So we're going to kick it off right now.
G'day. Scintillating, that's a bit... I think you need to look up the meaning of that, mate.
Yeah, well, I probably... Yeah. Well, I was going to say another word, but then there'll be broadcasting
standards. Sleep inducing, maybe.
Okay, well, might as well move on. Okay, we might as well go and talk about this. I've had AJ Whitten on about this morning. Really, did we learn anything from the All Blacks Tonga match? Is it really a waste of time? Would we be better off playing the New Zealand Maoris? Would we be better off having a North-South game? Your thoughts, boys?
Yeah, look, I thought it was not a good look for international rugby at all. I've got to say, after about the third try, 10 minutes into the game, at that point I was officially bored. I was over it already. I won a contest. You know, I expect the All Blacks to win most of the games they play, but, you know, I like the idea of sort of still wanting to, you know, wait for the outcome, and not always as predictable as it often is. But, yeah, it also just shows, though, that just how world rugby and prior to that, the IRB, it just, you know, just how neglected the Polynesian Pacific Island teams are, and what a disgrace it is. I mean, you know, there were still rumours that their players around the world weren't going to get released by their clubs. There's always those threats, or we'll get rid of your contract if you go and play for your country. And then, you know, hearing that they're having to play for their own isolation and stuff, and it's just the haves and the have-nots. And so, yeah, rather than jumping up and celebrating any sort of All Black performance, I think all it did was, I thought it was just a blight on the game and just another opportunity for us to sit here and go, you know what, world rugby needs to do more.
Sean?
Yeah, you're exactly right. I think it just, you know, no offence, but the fact is, I mean, they did pretty well considering what they had to choose from and how they put the side together, and it does show that, you know, the condition these blokes are in spite of the fact that they're not anywhere near as match fit or whatever as the All Blacks. But I just, it does cheapen Test rugby, but there is the other side of opportunity. And hey, if this was Tonga at its finest and they also weren't thinking about the match against Samoa, which had a big bearing as well, so they themselves, I think, chose to cheapen it at the same time. But it does defeat the purpose. It's a pre-season hit-out. Should they maybe not be called the All Blacks, New Zealand 15, a Divisional 15? I don't know. A Super Rugby 15? I'm not sure. But, you know, but the players like it, guys, because they can get the big stats and, you know, it ended up just being a joke. Can anyone take Mark Ellis's record off them? You know, and that was the... That was the thing. In a World Cup, you can sort of accept that because you can get those matches against the Minnows. I found it interesting, that whole Andrew Saville's question about player sort of health and risk of injury, and they made it into some sort of racist thing, and I thought that was a bit unfair because I think the point he was making that these were players that weren't up to this international level, and there was a chance, you know, especially in some of the positions in the forwards, that players could get badly hurt if they weren't ready for this. Because let's be honest, at our best fitness, us guys would last about 2 seconds in one of those tackles.
Yeah, and it's also just the scrummaging too. Look, I know there has been, I remember when players like Ben Asiaki was still playing for North Harbour and or playing against, I remember a very inexperienced North Harbour side and putting young props out there and basically just getting, you know, demolished by these quality All Black props and some of the concerns even by the referees almost saying, look guys, you know, I know you're lacking depth, but this is actually, you know, it is getting to the point where it's dangerous. Just on the Mark Ellis 6 tries, the actual overall All Black record by the most tries in a game is actually held by a man, Albert Grammer, old boy. I just thought I needed to throw this one.
Here we are. Ron Heaps.
Rod Heaps, 9, you know, so he was a Mags boy, and he was a New Zealand sprint champion. And he scored 7 tries against Northern New South Wales. So there you go. I just needed to put that one in there, boys, because I know that at some point, you're going to bring up your old alma mater at some point.
Hey, by the way, can I point out that St. Thomas of Canterbury College are actually leading the first 15 competition down in Christchurch right now. That's against Christchurch Boys High, St. Bede, Christ College, Shirley Boys.
It is.
I'm 100% behind you guys. I always like the underdogs to do well, and if I'm not supporting Mighty Mount Albert Grammar, I'm always a Kelston Boys or a St. Peter's College here in Auckland.
Now the first 15 at Max had a very good one at the weekend, so I did see that over the weekend. I thought you'd be, and that's why I've noticed you're a bit more happier today. But getting back to this rugby international, I don't think there are, I don't believe out of that match there were any winners out of that, but we might as well move on to a bit of motorsport. Sean, IndyCars and F1 wrap.
Well, get IndyCar out of the way. It's sort of nothing to write home about. Scott Dixon, it wasn't an impressive qualifying. He wasn't able to make the podium. Not that they really do podiums in the IndyCar, but, you know, solid enough race. He's still, you know, relatively in the hunt in the championship. Scott McLaughlin still doing well as the rookie back in 12th position. But, yeah, so I think that Dixon thing, he's still third on the series standard. He's not out of the other woods there, and obviously Newgarden snapped his he had a bad run of late race misfortune, so he's got his first win of the season. So look, hey, it's so for Scott Dixon ticking along, he's far from done. But let's talk about Formula One, because that is an absolute thriller. Max Verstappen has now won the last 3 races, and just looking at the ladder, he's now got a real decent lead over Lewis Hamilton in the Drivers' Championship. And I haven't done the research, boys, and looked back to see how long it's been since Lewis was in this position. But I'd say it wouldn't have been in this decade, and also the previous decade. Just incredible. He's now 32 points behind Lewis Hamilton, behind Verstappen. But I will say he had a bit of issue with some damage to the car that slowed him down a bit. But what was incredible, and if you get to see the race highlights, was the way drivers keep pushing each other off the track and passing moves is actually quite aggressive. And Lando Norris got a 5-second penalty. Perez got a couple of them. And it was entertaining because they weren't touching, but they were just pushing each other off the track. But the other thing that's worth noting, Lando Norris, McLaren driver, sits fourth in the championship. And McLaren are third, actually, overall. Red Bull obviously lead the championship. So interesting times. And if you don't follow F1 closely, this is something that hasn't been for a long time. You've got Max in a Red Bull first, Lewis Hamilton second, Sergio Perez in the other Red Bull is third, Lando Norris and McLaren is fourth, and Bottas, the other Mercedes driver, is back in fifth, Charles Leclerc, Ferrari in sixth. So things have certainly mixed up a lot this year. Back-to-back races at the Red Bull Ring, so it's obviously big celebrations for your team. But, you know, I think, well, we saw a one-sided event at the weekend, which we don't like to see in rugby. In Formula One, we're actually seeing some proper racing for the first time in a very long time.
Your thoughts, Mark?
Oh, no, look, I just always enjoy listening to Sean.
Yes, so do I.
Yeah, I just sort of, who's the engine behind Red Bull these days? I mean, Red Bull's Red Bull, but...
Well, here's the thing, it's Honda. Now, Honda were Mercedes, it didn't work. Then a bit of fuss happened with Renault and Red Bull because they've never been an engine builder. They had to be a customer. They got lost that, so they picked up the Honda engine. It was considered a bit of a donkey, but they stuck with it. Now it's suddenly doing really well, but here's the clincher. Honda have said they're pulling out of Formula One at the end of this year for various... look, they're saying it's for the sort of environmental reasons. Personally, I think it's because they've had no success. And this is the team that powered McLaren back in the days of Senna Prost. So what the plan is, the end of this year, Red Bull will take over the engine. They'll keep developing it. It'll become a Red Bull engine. I'm wondering if there's any discussions out the table. Honda might be saying, I think we need to stay in this because that big Honda on the wing hasn't been winning races in a long, long, long time. And but that's one of the things with Formula One. It happens in cycles, and you've got to pick your moment to still be, I guess, on that merry-go-round when things come your way, and they definitely are for Honda and Red Bull right now.
Sean, there's got to be concern, though, in the long term regarding Formula One with such a move towards electric cars and legislation in and around it and the need for different energy sources and the getting rid of fossil fuels within the marketplace, that you sort of sense that Formula E are going to benefit the most from this.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that these major manufacturers do this as a hobby. They clearly are doing it in regarding to taking the IP and being able to use it, in their everyday cars.
All right, you wound me up. Here I go. Formula One car starts a race. I'm going to say you wound me up. You've turned the old the key on me. Formula One cars actually start a race.
I'm not saying I agree with it. I'm just asking.
Yeah, well, yeah. They start the race without enough fuel to actually finish the race. They need the EV side of things, the recuperation of energy, to actually get through the race. So you'll see certain times where the light comes on the back of the car, they're actually harvesting battery power to make sure they've got the energy to finish the race. So the Formula One engine is actually the most efficient internal combustion engine ever made. So the technology there is actually amazing. They've made the sound come back a bit. Now, sound is actually energy, so the less sound, the more efficient the engine in theory, but sound is the emotion. It's what you love. Formula E is amazing, but they can't go the distance. Batteries are very heavy. There is a downside to batteries. You've got the situation just weekend before last, Rhys Millen, the Kiwi, set a record at Pikes Peak driving a Bentley, and I looked at it. He was driving against the EVs, and I thought, he's got a V8 engine. He was running on fuel, which is reusable sort of biofuel that is 85% greenhouse gas. So it basically hit the renewable. So it's actually... works out the same as most electricity because it's how it's generated. And I'll check in. So there you go. So the Formula One could actually run on biofuel or synthetic fuel, which could be almost greenhouse neutral. So there's the other side of it. And I'll check a wee one. You'll love this, Mark and Eamon. In Amsterdam, they recently banned fossil fuel ads inside the subway, which I thought was a crazy place to ban them. But then I had a wee look and thought the subway ones run on electricity. 81% of electricity in Netherlands is generated from burning coal and gas. So just because you plug it in doesn't mean it's clean. Sorry, I've dropped the microphone now.
Good call, Mr. Summerfield.
And don't be wrong, I've driven EVs. They're actually bloody fast.
Oh, look,
it's horses for courses.
Yeah.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I want to see the combustion engine always in operation, and as long as they're on the road, I'll probably always buy one over an electric car. But it is interesting, isn't it, this big push for e-cars, and if that's
they
where
can
market
be cleaned
supply
up.
And that's where market demand is, then we are going to see these manufacturers, aren't we? We're going to see them move towards forms of racing which are going to allow them to I know, find ways of lightening up the batteries and making the batteries more efficient and being able to put it out there and saying, hey, look, our company is a statement in innovation and we believe we get the best coverage of that in the particular race car categories.
Yep. Absolutely. Anyway, the Olympics is coming up soon, Mark, and you'll be off at, not too far for you before you get on the big plane to Tokyo. Anything we should be looking for? Like, I see Val Adams won a Golden League meet at the weekend.
Yeah, look. As I think we've always discussed, isn't it? Look, I go Saturday week. I think early Sunday morning. I'm up there for about 3 or 4 days before the opening ceremony on the Friday, and then it's all go really after that. And look, I was just interested to see Nick Willis has scraped in. He hasn't been running particularly well in the 1500 metres, but he is going to get a start. The thing with Nick is he's a championship runner, and there's been a little bit of controversy over whether he should have got a spot or not, because there have been a couple of other New Zealanders probably been running faster and consistent. But I guess, you know, you get the rub of the green if you are a two-time Olympic medalist, three-time Commonwealth Games medalist, and a world indoor medalist. So look, I'm pleased Nick is going. What can we expect from him? Who knows? Who knows? It's going to be tough, I think, for him. Valerie Adams, I think this game will just be fascinating because we just don't have a lot of historical data in the last 18 months to really sort of get a gauge on what an international competition is doing. In swimming, I think Lewis Clairbert, genuine medalist in the 400 individual medley, first time a swimmer could medal at the Olympics since Daniel Loader back in 1996, which is 20 odd years. Clearly I think Lisa Carrington, I think she will be the golden girl of the Olympics again. But as for rowing, yachting, you'd like to think we're going to have a pretty strong point of view in those. And there will always be those medals that we will throw up that we're probably not expecting, and then maybe there'll be some of those athletes who do what we thought they might do. And so
2 out of 7, are you?
Yeah.
I'm actually confident. I think our 7 teams might actually win both golds, actually, this time around. I've got a feeling that might actually end up being quite a successful program, more for the fact is that we have got some game time against the likes of Australia, and we have been training well, and we haven't been affected so much by lockdowns. Interesting to see Caleb Clark wasn't quite good enough to make it, and I admire the selectors for that. You know, I want the All Blacks to be made available, but I don't think they should just walk into a team because of their profile either. So, you know, well done to Langmore and Cohen in terms of picking that men's team.
Hey, you guys, I feel bad because you guys are trivia kings. You spot stuff. So I've spotted something today. I bought some tickets for that final rugby championship match against South Africa, Eden Park.
Yeah.
But I was looking, and they've actually got on the All Blacks website that the All Blacks are playing the Jagueres, not the Pumas.
Oh, well, good to see publicity. Speaking New Zealand rugby's running well, isn't
like
it?
Saturday night?
Yeah, the Jagueres. Mm. Well, they were the Argentinian national side.
Yeah.
Yeah, but our friends at New Zealand Rugby, they'll have something, they'll have some excuse for that, as we know from all three of us having dealings with New Zealand Rugby.
Well, maybe they didn't want to put down the Argentinian Pumas because they beat us last year for the first time in our history and Ian Foster was the coach. Just thought I'd mention that.
Hey, just by chance, is the rugby championship on the same time as the Olympics?
Oh, I think one test. No, I think one. I think first. I know the first of the Wallabies. I don't know. One of the Wallabies games is about the 21st of August, which is about when the Paralympics start. But I actually haven't looked at the schedule, to be honest.
No, neither have I. I think we'll get to it when we get to it. Anyway, guys, we're just running down the clock here. Just want to say thanks a lot, guys. Mark, we'll probably have you on next week. We'll probably have a chat about the Olympics. And
hey, Eamon, good luck against your boys, Eden, playing Ponsonby this weekend.
Absolutely. You've got to come down and have a look.